the most deeply shocking thing about the Darren Weir story is it did not seem to shock anyone deeply, was how Robert Craddock started a piece on Saturday, Why Did Weir Escape Cheating Uproar That Hit Cricket, which posed some salient questions and opens a great discussion on Monday morning for McCafe, the official coffee of Waitley. It's with great pleasure I welcome Robert Craddock back. Hello, Crash.
Ah, good to hear you back in the country, Jared.
You set the rabbits racing with this. It was a terrific take on what has felt complex, and you were able to simplify it quite brilliantly.
Yeah, well, I just felt, Jared, a couple of points that no one – I've got about 12 mates in racing. And I've done about four or five Melbourne Cups myself, travelling down, casual interest. I'm not going to say I'm not your level of commitment to the industry. But there were just no shocks. I've got a jockey friend, a trainer friend, three racing scribe friends, and they all just said, oh, yeah, mate, I think that's been coming. So I just compared it to cricket and the ball tampering affair, where there was absolute outrage against Smith and Warner. And I think racing lets itself down. You know, I'm looking for the big voices to comment. And, yeah, there's been a few of them, and I know the Freedmans and have said something, and Davernick, and, you know, they're, but collectively, I think the racing industry loves a whinge. That's what I know about it. It loves whinging about jockeys, trainers, track conditions, lack of government finances, everything. And yet suddenly, the biggest fraudulent operation, like the whole country's credibility as a racing nation gets come down a cog, and there's a collective lack of anger. And I find that slightly bewildering. I just think, you know, if you want to get angry at something, don't worry whinging about the jockeys right in the last. What about the 3,500 owners who've run second to Darren Weir's trained horses? What about the $144 million worth of prize money he's taken out of Australian racing? Save your anger for that, something that actually, you know, is worthwhile. But there wasn't much there, was there? Wow. What about the embarrassment of trainers? What about a trainer like Gerard Ryan, who trained a horse called Chauffeur, who won last, who it went through the Hawke stable, went through Gerard Ryan's really good trainers, man oh man, and the humiliation they would face is that horse, you know, won from last to first victory last month. So, you know, I just was surprised by the lack of collective anger, yeah.
There's so much that gets tied into it. I mean, 756 winners over the past two seasons. I feel part of it, Crash, is we don't know the depth of it. So, liking it at the start, is the possession of jiggers, is that Al Capone's income tax evasion?
Exactly. That's what it is. They had to get Al Capone on something, and the tax was the cast iron conviction, wasn't it? They've got the cast iron conviction. So this is, and in fact, my mates in the racing industry, you know, they were saying, oh, mate, there's more to come here. Or they were saying, what else have you heard? And no one, not one of them felt it was the end of the story, you know. So, but yeah, I just feel that, on one hand, racing will come out and say, we need more government support and all this. I'm telling you, every state in the country will suffer as a consequence of Darren Weir's action. I know up here in Queensland, I've already spoken to government officials off the record, and they say, mate, here's the thing. If you give money to a hospital, even if you're not in that hospital, people think, well, that's fair enough. But only racing people appreciate it when you give it money to racing, because everyone else goes, oh, those blokes. I suppose you saw the Darren Weir story. So racing doesn't realise how much this sort of incident costs it. It costs every state in the country. Yep. It's bleeding for a dollar. Darren Weir has let them down. And so I'm waiting for that sentiment to come out. But where are you? Are you out there somewhere, trainers? Have you got anything to say? Or you're hiding behind a tree somewhere? You know, feel free to arc up, you know. The reaction to my piece on Saturday was interesting. I got about quite a few supporting emails, and a couple saying, oh, mate, what Darren's done for the industry. And I thought, that's the whole thing, this living in denial.
And then there was, and I thought you made an excellent point around the plea of no contest.
Oh, well, that's pathetic. I mean, you know, if you're going to plead innocent and fight it, fine. If you're going to plead guilty and fine, but no contest. That's sort of like saying, I'll leave it up to you to make all the hard decisions, and what am I going to get away with here? And so Darren's tears were not tears of remorse or lament or regret. They were just tears because he got caught and what was going to happen to him. So if I sound pretty fired up about it, Jared, it's only because I see an industry really letting itself down here. And I've heard people say, hey, how good was Victoria? Like, they had the raid, and within a week, the stable is gone. Well, okay, fair enough. But he did take $144 million worth of prize money over the last 15 years. I mean, you wouldn't exactly say it was nipped in the bud, if you don't mind me saying so. Yep. I mean, the one thing about the ball tampering thing was it may have happened in another test, but that's two tests using sandpaper, then we're onto them and they're ejected from the game. But, wow-wee, what about this? I mean, you know, and people wonder why they're cynical about racing. And, I mean, I love the sport, but to me it's always got the best and the worst of people. Yeah.
1-300-736-736. Do you agree with Robert Craddock's view and the lack of outrage associated with it? Is that one of the issues is the drip feed now on how bad will this get? Mm. The police investigation is obviously the heart of it, and Andrew Rule wrote a piece which sort of tiptoed as close as anybody has to what the possibilities might be contained therein. I found... I was really uneasy watching Saturday's races, seeing horses that have come straight out of the Weir operation, basically from the Monday to the Saturday, and winning in devastating fashion and having no idea whether to take that at face value or not. But it couldn't happen under his name. That's true. Somebody put to me on Friday, so before the races, that maybe there just should have been a 12-week halt on any horse that's coming out of the Weir yard. It can't run. And you want to measure that up against the disadvantaging the owners. Well, if there have been untoward practices, then those owners have benefited previously. So if they miss out now, bad luck. Mm. I thought there was a real logic to the way that was put forward.
Yeah, absolutely, because it is a shocking look for the industry. Look, I'm up here in Queensland, and there's a young trainer, Ben Curry, who's got, they raided his stables a year ago and charged him with 29 offences, and he's got another four positive swabs. Oh, there he was, bold as brass, being interviewed at Doomben after two winners on the weekend. Like, you know, racing's got to be very careful to protect its own image. You know, I mean, remember the Damien Oliver affair from a few carnivals ago in over October, November, when he faced a lengthy suspension that took him through to the... And it was almost a suggestion that his charge was held over until the end of the carnival. So, yeah, I just think it's come out of it really badly. I do. And the... You know, it was just all to, you know, the reaction was, huh, yeah, fair enough. You know, and sort of, oh, yeah, I'm not shocked there. Not shocked there? The leading trainer in the country, and he's been going on with record breaking. Like, well, where was this investigation 3 years ago?
Mm. You've struck a chord, Crash. 1-300-736-736. Michael is in Wattle Glen. Welcome, Michael.
Jared, Crash.
Michael.
Why is Darren Weir's horses allowed to race now and is still under the influence of what happened? They should have got at least 2 months off.
And that's the void, is we don't know what's happened. So the one charge that has been accepted is the possession of jiggers, and that was enough for a four-year disqualification, which is not quite like for like if we're really honest about what's happened previously. So there's more there, but what is it? Is we're left in this void, I reckon.
Yes, it's fascinating, and that'll be the interesting thing, to follow these horses' form over the next 6 months. I mean, you know, the horse would have been, I mean, the Weir fingerprint on these horses, whatever it was, will be, surely would have lasted into this weekend. You'd imagine that. I mean, he's only left the stables, what, 2 or 3 days ago. So you would imagine, but that's a significant thing. What lies ahead for these horses? It'll be fascinating to follow it there for. I wouldn't want to be taking over a horse from Darren Weir, put it that way. And, you know, we've seen him improve so many over such a long period of time. But, Jared, it does also raise the spectre of just the cruelty of a jigger on a horse. It's, you know, I mean, I remember reading stories about racetracks around the country, the frequency of jiggers in bygone eras where they'd almost, jockeys would slip a fiver to the clerk of the course and slip him the jigger as well after a race, you know, and we're going back decades and decades into the here, but, you know, they were around and then they faded out a bit. But in remote areas, and you know, it's fascinating, isn't it? Just and that was one of the things about comparing it to the ball tampering affair, which in a lot of ways you can't. But at least a cricket ball never screamed in pain when it was touched up by a scratch here or there, you know. And Steve Smith's crime in the whole thing was to walk behind two guys planning a dark deed, and he said, oh, I don't want to know about this. So, you know, and no one went in harder on the ball tamperers than we did, Jared and you know, myself. But I just think, yeah, I'm surprised the level of outrage wasn't greater.
Ross is in Fremantle. Welcome to you, Ross.
Yeah, g'day. Yeah, Crash, really good to hear someone have your views. And it was actually really good hearing McAvoy talk earlier. It seems that the Victorian trainers are quite ladsy. And even Peter Moody's got a segment on SEN, like almost defensive of Darren Weir. And he was caught with jiggers. He pleaded no contest. And it's so surprising from people from afar, really.
Yeah, look, exactly, isn't it? Do you know what flashed through my mind when you're from Fremantle, yeah? Is that right?
Yes.
I remember I was watching the other night. You speak of cruelty to animals. There was a famous race in Perth when that horse Rocket Racer won a Perth Cup, and everyone thought that it was in the 1980s, and everyone thought it was sort of had a lot of help, a lot of you know, things in its system, and it just kept running after the race. And it barely raced again after it disappeared. And everyone, and there are people who, that horse's victory still makes a lot of people sick in the stomach. Rocket Racer. Get it on YouTube. You'll see it. This horse that just keeps galloping off into the sunset after winning a race by six lengths and barely raced again. So what was in that horse that day? But what you said is interesting, isn't it? The fraternity. I mean, it's that old thing. That's what I was waiting for. Sometimes silence is interesting. And even after the ball tampering affair, there was a, you know, fast bowlers were very reticent to comment on it because they felt, you know, there wasn't someone who'd done something to a ball, but it's just that the sandpaper was next level. But it is a good point you made, the old boys fraternity, you know, and but you know, so it's good to hear some voices speaking out.
Thanks, Ross. Dennis is in Mornington. Welcome to you, Dennis.
Yeah, I'll put a different spin on it. I was a little bit taken by the outrage in the cricket feeding. By the same commentators that TV in football every week. I mean, the rules in football is just as clear as the rules in cricket. You are not allowed to tackle a player or hold on to him unless he's got the ball, and you're not allowed to shepherd him unless the ball's within 5 metres. Yet you see taggers holding on to people's jumpers when the ball's 20, 30 metres away. In fact, that incident last year where the West Coast player hit the Fremantle player, Ross Lyon went at length to say that the ball was 100 metres away, yet his player was holding on to the West Coast player and the ball was 100 metres away. And there is just no mention that this systematic cheating goes on every week. And the same commentators are outraged that Smith and Warner actually give these guys votes. What a great job they did.
Dennis, I completely disagree with you. I'm sorry about that, but, mate, this sort of thing is okay, you know, a game of footy and there's brinkmanship and there's, yeah, it's almost like professional fouls, isn't it? You get away with whatever you can get away with, you know, in terms of, you know, bending the laws and whatever. But taking hardware onto a cricket field, a piece of sandpaper onto a cricket field, I mean, if you feel that is in the same realm as a guy tugging someone else's jumper, I'm sorry. To me, it's in a different, not even a different league, a different hemisphere, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Richard's in Camberwell. Richard, fire away.
Morning, boys. Love the show. Can I raise 2 points? Number one, I can recall about 5 years ago, there was an industry in this country called greyhounds. And there was live baiting, and everyone just went, oh.
Yeah, yep.
And the industry was absolutely butchered for about 4 or 5 years. Why not here? That's number one. Number two, I remember reading somewhere that Racing Victoria knew about this business or had deep suspicions, if not knew about it, in late August last year. But brilliantly passed it to police, basically just wiping the hands of it. Late August, by my calendar, tells me that's just about the time that the racing, the spring carnival starts. Imagine what would have happened had this burst forth on, say, the 2nd of September. Query question mark.
Mm. Yeah, well, on the timeline, and this is part of what is not known yet, is the investigation from Racing Victoria was almost 2 years, so you can actually go back to the August before. And then they brought the police in because the police have powers that Racing Victoria don't. I think you can read between the lines that that's phone tapping. And then it's what's in the phone taps. And this is what Andrew Rule moved towards in the Sunday Herald Sun on the weekend. What what is in the phone taps during last year's spring carnival and what gets called into question as a result. And this is the problem, is not knowing the extent of whatever cheating was going on. So possession of jiggers, four-year disqualification. Is that it? The use of jiggers, the manipulation of races, these are the sort of the open questions that once we fully know is, and I think that's some of the outrage that's not there, is just not knowing exactly how much of what's been going on is completely compromised.
Yeah. And terrific point, though, about the outrage in the greyhound industry over live baiting. It was this by a multiple of about 10, wasn't it? But your point is also correct, Jared, as in cricket officials had that same thing. They needed police to help them out because they do not have the powers to tap phones. And unless you've got the power to tap phones, it's very hard to get a concrete case. It really is, because I know in match fixing in cricket, all the transactions were done in cash. So there's no bank records or anything like this. And, you know, unless you catch a trainer using a jigger or it's such compelling evidence of phone tap when you've got a trainer saying A, B, C, D, is this your voice? Yes, that's my voice. Well, it's just compelling evidence. So they needed the police. But as you said, it's the Al Capone theory of getting them on something and then following through later.
Brian's in Gisborne. Welcome to you, Brian.
Hi, boys. I've got shares in a couple of horses, not with Darren Weir. And, say, 8 weeks ago, we ran second and third to a Darren Weir horse. And the bit that annoys me is not so much him getting caught, that life shit happens sort of thing, but excuse me. But it's more of the fact that all people like me that got a little share in a horse, we still got to pay. If our horse doesn't win, we still got to pay each week for it's trained. And if it was an Olympic Games and it was a gold medal one and they found it was cheating, the gold medal goes to another person. But for all the people like me that's got a little share in a horse, we don't get any money back. You know, like, that's the bit that annoys me. He walks away with all the money, whatever, whatever. But all the people like me that have a bit of fun with the racing industry, we're all get nothing out of it, and I've still got to pay at the end of the month if my horse ain't doing any good.
Yeah.
The bit that really gets to me.
Yeah. And that'll be rippling right across those who have had horses. It was framed by Andrew Rule around Star of Carrum in the Victoria Derby, but it flows out as if you've been beaten by a Darren Weir horse, you simply don't know whether you've been dutted or not.
Oh, it's look, and Jared, you know, the figure is 3,500, I think, winners. So imagine all those owners, is that lovely story of Andrew Rules on the Sunday Herald Sun, you know, that gets one shot at a Group One, and you're a small owner, it'll never be repeated, and you've run a hearty second. But yeah, you'll never know. That's right, and it is right. In Olympic Games, they now upgrade the medals, but this is far too complex for that. But it's there, that sort of sentiment. But even above that, I still feel sorry for, you know, trainers who've had their reputation trashed because they've lost a horse, and that horse has been really greatly improved. I mean, that's just humiliating, and it's also not just reputation damaging, but business destroying. You know, like you're sitting there, people say, gee, he's put 10 lengths on that horse, mate, hasn't he? You know, it's so embarrassing.
Robert Craddock taking your calls at the moment. Grant is on the road. Grant, welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Jared. Good morning, Crash.
Hi,
I just wanted to bring up and sort of speak about why there's probably not the outrage there was over the sandpaper gate. Basically, all Darren Weir's been found guilty of or pleaded guilty to is possession of the jiggers. I don't think there's any proof that anything else has happened at this point in time. So that's probably the reason why there hasn't been the outrage. I mean, it's like saying, well, we found sandpaper in the lockers or we found sandpaper in the pocket of a cricketer, but no evidence of it actually being used to tamper with the ball.
Very damning charges, though, Grant. I mean, like, 4 years. We all know what jiggers do. They're in his bedroom. It's his responsibility. So, look, I get your point to a degree, but I still thought there'd be more outrage. I really did.
I think that outcome versus The initial charge, I think you sort of weigh one with the other. A couple of messages, I think the video evidence of the cricketers is a major reason in the outrage being more dramatic than the Weir case.
Good point.
And, Jared, I've read Crash's article. He's spot on with his comments. McAvoy was just on with you, and he's saying he's not happy and was good to see that transgressors have been outed. And it goes on as Crash's assessments.
Well, I was just fascinated by Tony McAvoy's comments in that, do you believe that it's now a purer industry, more pure industry, or are you unsettled by the fact that Darren Weir won $144 million in prize money, more than 3,500 races, before the industry found out that he had jiggers in his bedroom? Like, you could really go both sides of that argument.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm split on it. I really am. Yeah. Like, I'm wondering who else is getting away with what?
You can't know what you can't know. As I posed that question to Racing Victoria's chairman around, well, you know, a week ago, would you have believed that this was the case? And now that's the problem for the sport. I can't remember racing having a more troubling 10-day period than it's just had with the man who's rewritten the records in this jurisdiction year on year on year, being removed from the sport, disqualified for 4 years, pleading no contest, and then wondering how far it goes. So it still swings on me. How deep does this go? What do the police have? Are they prepared to act on it? How much of what we've been watching over the last few years is not believable?
And there's a certain amount of sadness too. I mean, Darren Weir last year did a guest speaking thing at a little hotel in Brisbane called the Pink and Bar Hotel. And it's just out of the way. It's a real battler's hotel. And I understand that he did it for a few grand and really enjoyed talking to the locals so much that at the end of the day he said, why don't you keep my fee? He said, I've had such a nice afternoon. And, you know, so there's one side of it, a guy who could connect with the people. And, you know, they you know, I've spoken to three blokes that went to it and they said, you know, you've never seen a more engaging or personable. And he said, that was his scene, the battlers, you know, and he really loved it. And, of course, he's often said, hasn't he, that it's okay going to Flemington on a sad day, but he'd just happily turn the other direction and go to one of the country cups where run into old mate. So there's that sadness to it as well.
Yep. Darren's on the road. Welcome, Darren.
G'day, Jared, Crash. I've just got a couple of points I'd like to make. One is I'm a confused punter and felt very hollow on Saturday. Just, I don't know, lost my mojo and everything. But with this, there's the word integrity just keeps getting thrown around, which I think is pretty loose because there's no transparency and there's no full story. So the way that I see it personally is that it was the jiggers. Unless you're in the game, no one would have known what a jigger was unless you're inside horse racing vernacular. I see it as a training aid where the Aquanita thing was they were topping up and giving it drugs or, you know, bicarbs on the day of a race where it was basically, you know, it was given something to assist it where the jigger is basically something that was used during the week. I don't know, but this is just the way that I see it as Joe Public, with a training assistant thing, like a whip or like, you know, whatever else they use, whether it's a one-eye, you know, winker or whatever it is to teach them how to run straight. But
yeah. So, Darren, you can be safe in the knowledge that it is illegal to make a horse run faster using a jigger, whereas it's not illegal around the whip or it's not illegal around winkers or blinkers or nose rolls. It's just straight out illegal to have them because it's cruel to the animal.
That's the key, Darren and Jared, isn't it? That last sentence. Both the drugs that Aquanita, drenching the horse, I mean, changing its sort of lactose levels so that it can absorb more pain, or sparking it up and getting it ready to, you know, put the blinkers on and the horse is thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to get sparked up again today, I better run. It's still all under the one umbrella of animal cruelty. And look, I spoke to a jockey and I said to him, have you ever seen a horse you know, with jigger? He said, yeah. He said, I saw one go hysterical once. He said, and that's the thing, you know, he said, it just, they hit it on the one side, it ran towards the outside fence. He said, some horses can't hack it. You know, it's brutal. It's cruel to animals. And then that's the start of the argument, and that's the end of the argument.
One more, Crash, and then we'll change gears properly to cricket. Trisha's on the road. Hello, Trisha.
Oh, hi. Good morning, boys. I just had to ring in because after reading Michael Lynch and Peter Ryan's article in The Age on Saturday, I think it should be compulsory reading for everyone because we're forgetting the main word, and the main word is pain. And what happens is they use the jigger on the horse, but then they keep running their hand down the horse's neck after the jigger isn't being used. So the horse associates that action with pain and screaming in the horse's ears. And please, you know, don't let us just brush this aside. It's the pain associated with it, and it's nothing other than animal cruelty to win at all costs. And I know from some equestrian friends that none of Darren Weir's horses ever go on to other better lives. They're euthanized because they're not able to be used as horses in other in other ways. Yeah.
Tricia, we'll let that emotional call stand as the final points on this. And Crash, we'll change gears to the cricket. There's so much to talk about out of the weekend, and the Alan Border medal and the Belinda Clark trophy to be handed out tonight.
You're listening to Waitley.
Oh, something I've wanted to do pretty much from the day that I stopped playing. Cricket's in my blood, and Australian cricket's in my blood. So, you know, I've wanted to get back involved where I could. Look, I'm really excited to be around, and especially around a World Cup. I don't think I'll be able to do much around Test cricket for the fact that it's through the summer, and obviously with my commentary commitments during the summer, it makes it hard. But, you know, with the World T20 coming up as well, I think I might be able to do a little bit more work around the group with that as well. Hopefully, I can have a good impact on the group and the way the boys play their cricket. I mean, I was lucky enough to play in a lot of World Cups. And three winning ones, and so I think I've got a pretty good grasp on what it takes for tournaments like that. You know, obviously played a lot of cricket myself, one day cricket, and look, hopefully I can have an impact right from the start. You know, all the feedback from the boys and that so far has been pretty positive. I've had lots of text messages and things the last couple of days, so I'm looking forward to joining as soon as I can.
Ricky Ponting has joined the coaching staff for the World Cup defence later this year in England. It was almost as if he'd been unveiled to bat at three in his pomp, Crash. How significant is it to have Ponting in the Brains Trust?
Yeah, I love it on two levels. He's just a completely different style of coach, I think, to Justin Langer, in that Ricky's, at this stage of his life, he's so chilled out. Whereas Justin, you know, by necessity, and it's his strength as well, but he's so intense. Whereas Ponting's the opposite now. He's done it. He's achieved it. And secondly, knowing you were going to raise this, Jared, I went back this morning and looked at a book I wrote with Matthew Hayden. Mm-hmm. And I just remember it was about 7 years ago, and he said in the book, he said, no person has ever given better advice on batting than Ricky Ponting. When you're batting with him, he said, honestly, he said, and it's short and clipped and precise. He comes up to you, mate, I saw the way you changed your grip there. I know you're thinking of the off drive. Don't. You know? And he said, oh, mate, you're getting restless, aren't you? That front foot, it's starting to nibble again, isn't it? And you know, he's all eyes, and he sees everything. He's so perceptive. And I just think having him in the one thing that you have to have in a dressing room for the World Cup is calmness. Every time, that's the great common thread of all Australians' World Cup win. And to have Ponting sitting there in the corner of the room, loose as a goose, it just has to be good, you know. A really good signing for Australia, you know, no question about that.
All right, Michael's in Balnarrin to talk cricket with us, Crash. Michael, welcome.
Yes, good morning, Jared and Robert. Look, on the surface, I think Ponting's appointment could be a good one, but I'd like to talk about events in South Africa, if I may.
Mm. Yeah.
Steve Smith, I've regularly heard him say on interviews that we play our best cricket when we play on the edge. I think that bears a sort of closer inspection. But when Dave Warner was interviewed post events in South Africa, he was asked by a couple of press people, was this the first time he'd tampered with the ball? And he kept saying, I'm here to talk about this test only. I think if he had nothing to hide, he would have answered that question directly with a yes or a no. Mm. Hopefully a no. But and also, just this sledging. I don't understand why it's been allowed to go on for so long. You and I can't sledge in our jobs, Jared or Robert. I'd be up in my profession, I'd be up against the board, you know, explaining my actions. I know sport is a little bit different, but I think it sounds to me like the Australians have got away with a lot, and possibly other teams too, for too long. And it seems like Dave Warner has been one of the instigators of this, but his captain of recent times, from my observation, has sat pretty close to him at first or second slip, and clearly Smith and possibly Michael Clarke have heard this going on, and I've never seen them do anything about it. So yeah, maybe you'd like to give some thoughts on that.
Yeah, there's been a shift, Michael, since then, and well, there should have been. And Tim Payne was with us at the start of the program today, and a lot of what they set out to do in attitude and perception, I think they've been able to lay a framework for, and then Warner and Smith, who are clearly coming back into the side, have to be integrated into that. So I do feel like Payne is... Well, he was entitled to the fresh slate to see how much he could do. I think he's done a lot in a short period of time, and now we see what that grows into. But, yeah, hopefully the worst.
Too.
Yeah.
Stump Mikes has changed sledging, no doubt about it. You hear all the banter this year. It's back to where sledging sort of was a couple of decades ago. But, look, they were also a team playing, Peter Roebuck, the late cricket writer, used to say it, the worst thing you can do is play beyond the bounds of your personality. And some of these blokes were sledging who didn't know how to sledge, and it wasn't even really them. And it was a grubby era. There's no question about that. But I do think it's changing, and it's significant that one of the front runners for tonight's Alan Border medal is a guy who, to me, personifies exactly the right sort of tone of how you should behave, and that's Pat Cummins.
Yep.
He's still only played about 30 first-class games, but he's had life outside the bubble. He was injured. He went to university. He saw other people. He saw battlers, and he's got a slight worldliness that's well beyond his years, and I think he's the new benchmark for behaviour.
The Alan Border medal's been loaded towards batsmen, I think bowlers would say, what in cricket is not? It should be fought out by two bowlers tonight, shouldn't it? Pat Cummins and Nathan Lyon.
It's a terrific point, Jared. I mean, three bowlers have won it in 19 years. McGrath once, Mitchell Johnson once, Brett Lee once. That's poor. Shane Warne never won an Alan Border medal, despite, in 2005, Shane Warne took the most test wickets by anyone in the history for 1 year. He took 96 wickets and never won the Border medal because he wasn't playing one-day cricket. I mean, there's a travesty right there. So if it's Nathan Lyon, it's the first time a spinner will have won it. And it's look, I tell you what, he had a good year, 49 test wickets in 2018. They did come at 34 each. So he had a lot of bowling. Pat Cummins took only, I think it was five fewer wickets, but an average of 19, and he bowled almost only half as many balls as Lyon, and there was his batting too, Pat Cummins.
Yep.
So he's had a really good year, but it should be a bowl. I mean, I looked at the batting for 2018, and I can't reveal the figures because we've got young listeners, and they may find they're so offensive, the statistics. I don't want them to turn off or have parents say you can't listen to that. But Usman Khawaja was the top run scorer in 2018, and can you pick who was second best in tests for Australia?
Yep.
I'll give you four guesses, Jared. Go on, have a go.
My default answer is always Sean Marsh.
Sean Marsh? No, he was third by one run. Someone beat him by one run, and I'll make it easy. He wears gloves. Tim Payne.
Tim Payne.
Second highest run scorer in 2018 in tests. Think of that. How bad were our batsmen?
There was some pretty outrageous batting in the BBL across the weekend. What happened in Friday night in Brisbane, 10 overs, 158 runs without the loss of a wicket was astounding. And then Glenn Maxwell's innings yesterday is as good as the competition's seen.
Oh, yeah. What I loved about Maxwell's innings yesterday was you couldn't call it orthodox batting, but it was beautiful the way he kept his shape and sort of thought, I'm going down the ground, I'm going to hold my line here, I'm going to get my weight trend, and I'm just going to bing and biff blokes. It was beautiful to watch. It was just, there's a time when Maxwell's walking with the gods and having a day out, it's really quite special. And I don't underestimate having Ricky Ponting in the World Cup dressing room, what will that do for Glenn Maxwell? Because for all of his confidence and talk of the big show, I reckon Glenn's the sort of player that needs a bit of a hug, and he needs to be appreciated by his coaches. I just think they get so much more out of him, and Ponting is that player. Publicly and privately, he's always said, mate, Maxwell's got it. He will be the goods. So significant moment in the career of Glenn Maxwell, with Ponting being appointed assistant coach of the World Cup.
And England and the West Indies are rounding out their series. Tim Payne was telling us in the middle of the night he was up checking the scores. England 277 bowled the West Indies out for 154, none for 19. So that's moving reasonably rapidly. They've been dismal through the first two tests, England. What have you read into this series?
I've just loved the way the West Indies have... They almost played with a kookaburra ball and a flatter decks and said, let's see if we can grind our way into the series. They said, no, let's have a go. Let's play the juke ball, get all these tall, fast bowlers and rip in. And England were always going to bounce back in the third test, which I think they've done. But man, oh man, if they have, for the first time in 40 years, they have not got a decent opening batsman. No Alistair Cook. He's in the commentary booth in the West Indies, and that must hurt him in the Ashes. Australia will have this great sense of when they take the new ball and every Ashes innings, they will say, we'll get into these guys right now. But they say it's been a great tour to be on. Steve Harmison, the former lanky fast bowler, did a guest speaking gig the other night to the Barmy Army, and they had a giant poster of him on the wall as he entered, and they said, $20, sir, to come in. And he said, no, I'm the guest speaker. And they said, no, you're not the guy in that photo. And he said, and Harmison said to him, geez, how much weight have I put on? He was unrecognizable, so he had to pay his $20 and said to him, if I'm going to pay this, I'm going to drink all night, which he did. So.
Very good,
a great crash. Yarn out of the Windies.
Great yarn to finish with. Ben Stokes, 79. Josh Butler, 67. So that's where the runs came from England in their first innings. They bat for a second time, but they've got the whip hand in that third test, having been walloped in the first two. Crash, great to chat on a Monday.
Pleasure, Jared. See you next week.